I got my first pack of NYXL strings, never having heard of them, knowing nothing really about them. It's just like, hey, this is something new that's coming out. Can you give this a try and let us know what you think about it? I couldn't break them. I couldn't throw them out of tune. No matter what I do, those strings are always there for me.
Hey, this is John Bollinger with Premier Guitar. So Adrian Vandenberg is a Dutch guitar player who made a name for himself around Europe with the band Teaser and later his self-titled band Vandenberg. They had a big hit with a power ballad called Burning Heart, and this got the attention of David Coverdale, who then recruited Vandenberg to join him on Whitesnake's Whitesnake album in 1987. In fact, that's Adrian playing the solo on Here I Go Again, their huge number one hit. So without further ado, this is Adrian Vandenberg's Rig Rundown.
A little bit of Here We Go Again.
Yeah, right. Hey, this is John Bollinger with Premier Guitar. I'm with Adrian Vandenberg. Adrian, I'm so glad to be here with you today. I've been a long time fan, and to see you with that guitar, which, I mean, I've been watching that guitar for 40 years, right?
Me too. It's two of us. That's great, man. It's great to be here.
Yeah.
It's surprising to me also, because as people will know, I haven't toured the States for 30 years.
Right.
The last time was in 1990 with Whitesnake and the Slip of Tongue tour.
Yeah.
So I'm really surprised, and it's actually quite emotional to get all those people out there, and they're all really lovely and sweet, and they seem to have waited, and there were, you know, ladies with pinking out a tear whenever we play
right.
Like Here I Go Again, I'm Burning Heart especially.
Right. Oh yeah.
But yeah, I mean, for me, it's a little bit of an out-of-body experience, almost.
That's beautiful. Well, Adrian, you're a big deal.
Yeah. 6'7" deal.
Yeah, right. Okay, there was, I want to talk about this guitar, but before we get into that, on what song is it where you're doing, on that Whitesnake song, there's a bow involved.
Oh, yeah.
Do you mind revealing how you were doing that? Were you actually using a bow?
I used it on stage in that tour. And it actually, I figured out, because it is pretty, unless you want to make like weird sounds, but I really wanted to play that with a bow.
Yeah.
And I managed to do it on just this string. And I haven't done it in a while, but it was, what was the lick again? It is in a Z. Yeah, that's what. Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
So I managed to kind of dampen this string and play the whole lick on this one. But then with the bow,
right?
Because of course the radius of the neck is not like a violin. You know, violin is like this.
Yeah.
So I could only get away with it on one string.
And it was so fluid and perfect and just amazing. You could pull that off.
Well, yeah. I guess I was just lucky.
Lucky every night.
Yeah, I'm a lucky bastard. I'm totally aware of that.
Right. Okay, well, I know our audience wants to hear about this guitar.
Well, this guitar has got some history. Actually, there's a new pickup on it today, because I have the original Tim Shaw pickups on this one.
Sure, because it was 1980, correct?
Yeah, it's an original 1980 that I bought new. I sold two guitars and a motorcycle afford this guitar.
And this is prior to Whitesnake, right?
Yes, this was in 1980.
Yeah.
It actually, on the pickup, we took it off today because the one that's on there was squealing like a pig, you know? And it was really shitty because whenever I moved into a solo, and I got too close to the wedges, or anywhere, basically. You're like, whee! Oh, shit. And then you go, where do we start with a thing, you know? I couldn't avoid it. So yesterday we were at the Gibson shop, and I picked up another pickup. And as you can tell, it looks brand new. But the original Tim Shaws are not potted.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Plus, today, Willem found out that the pickup that was on there also came loose, the soldering came loose. That may have been the cause, but we didn't take any more chances. It drove me nuts, and it drove our sound front of house mixer Raymond nuts too, because people usually blame them. You know,
yeah,
go,
right.
Yeah, stop the squealing, you idiot. You know, but it came from me. So, so yesterday, we went to the Gibson custom shop, and Tom was there. You know,
Tom Murphy.
Yeah,
I bet he liked seeing this.
He was quite blown away. And what was really interesting is those guys they go to great length to make relic a guitar in the proper way, not like just throw a bunch of keys here and there and
sure.
drag it around the village for a couple of miles behind a car or something. So, as they do in the Middle East with sometimes apparently not with guitars though, but. So he was really amazed by these little scratches over here,
right?
Because he did not see that before on another guitar. And on the way back from the custom shop, I thought, what am I doing different than anybody else? I mean, I know what I do different, but I would be inclined to think that everybody kind of hits the strings at the same time. Then I realized that I use more upstrokes than other people do, I suppose, but I never thought about it because I don't really think about what I do. That goes for my whole life, actually.
Sure.
I just do something, create a big mess, and try to clear the mess afterwards. And that's my playing too. So they were pretty impressed by this little scratchy thing over there. And you know, the back looks pretty ragged.
Sure.
It's been around, but.
Well, and I remember when that guitar was much darker burst and it had a lot more red in it, right?
This was a tobacco burst.
Wow.
It was really dark when I bought it, and on the older Vandenberg shots, every once in a while somebody sends me a shot that they took when we were supporting Kiss or Ozzy or something in 83 and 84.
Right.
When we were still young and handsome, and now we're just handsome, you know.
Yeah. Okay. That was good. Yeah.
So, I was actually amazed when I see one of those pictures how dark it was.
Yeah.
So, and this is, I think they call it a honey burst right now.
Right.
I call it my guitar.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You're number one. Well, that's.
And yeah, it's relic by my own sweat, blood, and tears, you know. And
sure.
That's the way to relic. You can tell by the neck, you know, it's all gone, basically.
Beautiful.
It survived some serious abuse.
Oh, so any catastrophes, any neck breaks or anything like that, or has it survived nothing that drastic?
No. It's because I always make sure I have it with me. And
sure.
The first thing my trusty tech Willem does right after the gig, he just wraps it up and takes it to my dressing room
or
to the bus or wherever we are.
So this will be the first gig on the new pickup.
Yes.
The first change in 44 years.
Yeah, it is.
Wow.
And I really have to fiddle around with the tone because the original Tim Shaw sounded a little more rounded. Of course, first of all, the pickup is 40 years old.
Yeah.
I'm not even 40, you know.
Yeah, so right.
You can imagine what the pickup must have gone through. But we fiddled around with the tone, just mellowed it out a little bit more.
Do you know which Gibson pickup they?
Yeah, this is a regular burst bucker.
Okay.
That's it.
Yeah.
Nothing that nobody can get, you know, the rest.
Sure.
Well, what makes a difference?
Burst buckers are great.
Yeah, they're great. You know, I think they're very undervalued because people automatically assume there's so many great pickups. Duncan pickups, great. Everybody knows it, you know. But just like me, when I bought a guitar, at the time I couldn't afford buying another pickup because the guitar was basically all my money, you know.
Sure. Good investment.
What a lot of people do is they automatically change the pickups whenever they get a guitar.
Yeah.
And with Gibson guitars especially, people go, okay, I'll put a Duncan on it or whatever. Yeah. But Gibson is not stupid, you know, so I think their pickups are great too, you know?
Yeah, they're great, yeah. Well, I'm interested how you feel about this one after that change, after having that kind of microphonic.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot more relaxed on stage because it was driving me crazy. I was walking, you know, looking for a place.
Yeah.
I felt like a homeless person, you know? I was, but then. Yeah, the interesting thing is I recorded every record I've ever made since 1980. This guitar is on it, plus one or two other guitars.
Yeah, and when you're writing songs, were you writing on this one as well, or is that usually an acoustic thing?
No, this one and a keyboard usually. But really? my last two albums, I only wrote on this guitar and one of my PVs.
Yeah.
Because it feels different. So every guitar player knows you get different ideas when you have when it feels different neck or different whatever.
Yeah.
It sounds very similar though because I change them during the gig. I don't really hear a difference, but it could also be because my ears go down because of the volume.
Sure. You are pretty loud.
Yeah, I confess. Yeah.
Yeah. God, I remember watching like that show in Russia when you've just got that wall of amps behind you.
Oh man, yeah.
Wow, man.
Well, you know, the thing is, I'm a lucky bastard on several fields, but also in that respect, when I was 18, I got asked by a professional blues boogie-woogie type of band in Holland who was quite well known, and all those guys were 10 years old, they were all professional, and I was just starting my studies.
Yeah.
I thought, oh great, some money, you know, I can buy another amp, another guitar, whatever. And the piano player, whose band it was, really good boogie-woogie blues player, and we played in bars also, and at some point he decided his piano wasn't loud enough. So he bought some of those Bose speakers on those stands.
Yeah.
And whenever it was a small bar, one of the stands was right next to me. And it drove me crazy because everybody knows a piano, when you hit the piano and it's amplified, it's bam right there.
Oh yeah, very present.
So I realized, man, I got to do something because it drives me crazy. So that's when I started to use earplugs. And it saved my hearing because my hearing is still, I got a little bit of a dip in the high frequency, but it's not bad. I don't need anything, you know. And
yeah.
I mean, guys like Jeff Beck and all the guys from that generation, they're screwed, man. They have to wear headphones to cancel the noise and stuff. So not fun.
Yeah. So kids, watch your ears.
Yes. Yeah.
It's really. The only say you get. It's
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. It's important.
So earplugs, important part of the rig. Of the rig rundown. Let's hear about strings. What strings are you using?
Right now, I'm playing 9s to 46, I think.
Uh-huh.
I got to a stage when I was heavily into a Steve Ray Vaughan kind of vibe.
Right.
I went up to 0.12.
Oof.
But man, that's not fun.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and especially on a Les Paul, to me, like heavier strings on a Les Paul fight a little bit more.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Yeah,
and I like 0.09s. I've had a period when I was about 17 or something where I played 0.07s for a while.
Billy Gibbons.
Billy
territory.
Does. Yeah. And Billy, you can't say.
Right.
But he probably hits the strings like very delicately. Is that the right word? But
yeah.
Because otherwise you go wow, you know, the strings fly all over the place. But yeah, I like 9s and 10s sometimes too. You know, I don't really have that much difference in tone or feel. I mean, after 3 days you're used to it, you know.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And what brand do you usually use?
Right now it's Ernie Balls.
Yeah.
I'm not endorsed by those guys. I used to be in the Whitesnake days, but this is actually a pretty funny story. They changed the European importer, distributor, whatever, importer, I think.
Yeah.
So when they changed, I got a mail by a person from that company, and they said, well, you have an endorsement with us, but we want you from now on, under every social media post, to put something like hashtag I play caller. I go, man, I'm not a fucking kid, you know? I'm not gonna do that, you know?
Right,
I don't care about that. Extra few cents, you know?
Yeah.
I'll pay for the fuckers, but
I
played, I don't care, you know, but I played DRs for a while, and in the period in the 80s, I played BV strings for a while. I don't really, I mean, on an acoustic guitar, I can hear the difference, you know?
Right.
But on electric, with this kind of level, I can tell the difference, you know?
Yeah.
If anybody can, please let me know. Give me your phone number and we'll talk about it.
Yeah, okay. And what picks you use?
I use my nails.
All the time?
Well, yeah, I have to because...
I mean, I've seen you play with picks.
Yeah, but sometimes with the chords, when I can get away with it, what happened, the reason why I couldn't play on the Slip of a Tongue album was I had a wrist problem. A lot of people I've seen discussions on the web
about
people
okay, let's clear that up, because there's a lot of speculation.
Yes. What happened was one day I woke up. It sounds like a great first line. Great first line of a blues song.
Right.
I woke up this morning. So I did wake up, fortunately, and it felt like somebody was holding my wrist. I thought, what's going on? You know, so practice, and it didn't improve. So I called up the studio. We were working on a Slip of Tongue album, and I said, well, I'd like to take the day off. And I went to an acupuncturist, to a physical therapist, to a vitamin consultant, whatever, and nothing changed. And it lasted for a week, and everybody was waiting in the studio.
Right.
And I felt really bad. I called up my dad, and I told him about that, like 2 days after it happened already. So I called him up again. I said, but Dad, you know, I think I'm going to look for some therapy or whatever it is. I don't know what it is, you know. And he looked up a clinic in Holland that specialized in musicians and in ballet dancers and stuff, you know. I'm not very good at it, but this looks pretty convincing.
Yeah, very convincing, yeah. Right.
But so I went there, and they put all kinds of sensors on my arms and my neck and my shoulders. And they said, well, it seems to be a little tight in here, but we can't find anything else. I thought, well, what can it be, you know? So in the end, of course, Steve Vai was brought in, and we toured together, because right before the tour, I went like 4 times in a week per week to a physical therapist, and I kind of freed my arms and my neck and whatever. In that tour, I went to a physical therapist like at least twice a week to keep everything loose or relaxed, kind of. It wasn't, but it still felt different. I only found out in 1999 when another set of x-rays was taken. It sounds like a little secret.
That's weird.
That it resulted from a car crash I was in 1980, and I had 2 neck hernias that were pressing against the nerves that triggers the index finger and the thumb, which is why the pick kept flying all over the place, and this was just really stiff. I had 2 neck operations in the States, because they did it. I've got 2 little scars over here. They did it through a little tube. It sounds pretty gross. They go behind your Adam's apple to the scene of the crime, which was between the fourth and the fifth, and the fifth and the sixth vertebrae over here, where the nerves come out, and they go over here. Anyway, that's the medical part of the story, but so I had those 2 operations, but it never got that much better. It got a little bit better, and then it appears that since it resulted from 1980, what happens is, for instance, when you break a leg, your other leg takes more.
Yeah, compensates.
Compensates more, and so in my case, since it already was the case in 82 or in 1980. That accident. In the Vandenberg days, I remembered when I thought back, there was a time with the 3rd Vandenberg album, but before every recording, I soaked my arm in hot water too, because it felt really stiff. But I only remember that when I started thinking about, you know, how did it start, how did it evolve, and how did it get to this point? So only the last, the last Whitesnake tour I did was 1997-98. I remembered I started playing more with this particular nail, with certain parts. Yeah. And then I picked, but the solos, I started doing more and more with this nail. And I'm really lucky that I've got thick nails. With my thumb, I open up cardboard boxes. When I order something from Amazon, I go,
really?
So I always have a stiletto with me.
Do you put nail polish on them?
No, I put nail strengthener hardener on it. Just to make sure, this is the first tour that I'm doing with all the shows in a row, but it goes pretty well. So so far, so
perfect.
As long as I can get away with it. But the thing is, the precision is less. I'm still working on it, and I'm still changing between those 2 nails. Lately, I promoted this one to the backup. So sometimes I use this one too. But then, well, you're probably I don't know. I don't think about it too much when I'm playing. I just use whatever nail is available.
Right, right.
That's a
picture. So do you palm a pick and use it occasionally?
Yeah, or? Yeah. Like when I certain rhythm parts where I think, oh man, I really can use the pick over here.
Yeah.
And then with the solo, I either toss it away. The pick. Will knows all about that.
Yeah.
Because he, that's one of the first things he does after a show. He's like, what is it, Hansen Gretel, you know? I leave behind like a whole trail with picks.
Right.
And Willem goes over the stage. so he gets a lot of them, and yeah. Not all of them. But and then I do the solo, and I take on with one of my nails, and then I grab behind me one of the picks or whatever. I just go with the flow.
Yeah, right.
It's a weird flow, though.
Yeah.
But like I said, it's not as precise yet, but I'm working on it. The hard thing is during a gig, every guitar player knows, you know, your adrenaline takes over. And I go, I don't care, I just want to play, you know, so. And then I fuck up left, right, and center sometimes. And I go, okay, you know. That's the way it is, it's rock and roll, you know.
That's why I use it. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know, as long as I can get away with it.
Right, right.
Hey y'all, I'm John Bollinger with Premier Guitar. So our rig rundowns for a long time now have been sponsored by D'Addario. And I'm thrilled to be using the D'Addario Expand pedal board. I've got this little guy that fits in my gig bag, and like many of you, I'm changing pedals all the time. I love having a board that can shrink as I'm shrinking my board or expand as I'm expanding it. And that's why I love the Expand pedal board. Their patented telescoping technology lets me instantly change the size of my pedals playground. It also features a unique cable management system and comes fitted with loops of Velcro, keeping everything neat and easy to swap. The two Expand versions comes with either one or two rows, depending on your needs. So a big thanks to D'Addario. Now, let's get back to more rig rundown.
Okay, so this is your number one, but you now have a new signature guitar with Peavey, correct?
Yeah, it's a re-release. It's updated.
Yeah, because you've had a long relationship with Peavey.
Yeah, it's just really, really nice. When in 87, you know, when Whitesnake suddenly got so big, you got guitar thrown at you all the time.
Sure.
And just when you don't need it anymore because you have your guitars.
Right,
and
right.
That's a sad thing with endorsements.
Yeah.
Because you can afford them when you're a teenager, you know, and then when you got all your guitars, suddenly you can. So I tried out like some ESPs and Fernandes and all this stuff, and they're all great.
Yeah.
But when Peavey approached me to design a guitar for them, and that was really, really great because at that time, Peavey wasn't taken seriously enough as a guitar manufacturer. They were great,
yes,
but they weren't sexy, I think, you know.
Sure.
In my opinion, what do I know? I don't know nothing. I don't know anything about sex. On the road, I play Scrabble, you know, collect post stamps, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I thought that's a great opportunity to be like in a spearhead, is that an expression to be in a, like at a spearhead of a development? It's a Dutch.
I know what you mean. Yeah. Sort of be the flagship of.
To be at like the very beginning of a, hopefully a tennis like a movement where they're going to be taken more seriously.
Right. And Van Halen went with them shortly after that. Correct?
Yeah.
So.
You know, if it ain't Dutch, it ain't much.
That's good.
Yeah, you know. But
sure,
anyway,
he's Dutch as well.
He's Dutch, yeah. Him and Alex moved when Eddie was, I think he was 12, Alex was 14 or something,
yeah.
Something like that. And I got to spend some time at Eddie's place.
You were with him, did you speak in Dutch or English?
Yeah. And what was interesting is the first thing I noticed when I met him for the first time, that Alex and him speak Dutch among each other.
Right.
And their mom was still alive, and she was Dutch-Indonesian.
Yeah.
And since they moved in the 60s, it suddenly made me realize more than you normally do that how language evolves, because the kind of Dutch expressions they used were very 60s.
Oh.
So that was interesting, but he was just a sweetheart, a great, great guy.
Yeah.
One of the most. Well, we know, you know, he's one of the most brilliant players ever.
Sure, sure. And you were both some of the flagship PV artists. That's great.
Yeah, sort of. Coming back to the PV thing, it was great. I designed the guitar on the road because we were touring. So every day I put like a big piece of paper on the wall and it's got a sketching and to a shape. I wanted a shape that just like a Stratocaster, Telecaster, or Les Paul, that you could recognize from miles away.
Yeah.
Because in my opinion, you know, the Charvels and the Jacksons, they all looked very similar.
Sure.
And I thought, well, why do something that everybody else does, you know? So that's how I came up with the shape. And I was flown to, in Hartley Peavy's private jet. I felt like a rock star for a while, you know?
Well, so, you are a rock star.
Well, I didn't want to know about that. Yeah, yeah. But flew to Mississippi and worked with the PV guys on the pickups, the electronics, and where what and everything. And I love that guitar. It's great because
William's got it right here. Let's see this.
There is one. This is a prototype. I'm playing it a couple of... on a number of songs in the show whenever I feel like it. Of course it feels different, but I already baptized this one as the Batman guitar because I'm still waiting for Batman to order a few because it's good enough for Batman, it's good enough for anybody.
Right.
But it just sounds just great. Great guitar.
Sounds great. So do you usually have the whammy bar on when you're using?
Well, this since I got unused to using the whammy bar because everybody and his grandma was doing it in the 80s.
Yeah, and for a while in the 80s you were using it.
Yeah,
and
I love
it. On your Les Paul, and then you.
Yeah.
And.
Willem did, he blocked it. You can't see it actually, but so right now it's fixed.
Yeah.
But I am going to need it for the instrumental part that I used to play in those tours.
Sure.
Right now I don't use it, you know, so I might as well block it. And but it feels completely, it's got a really thin neck. People know that when I worked on it on the neck with PV at the time, just sanding away. A lot of people said, oh, you can't get away with a neck that thin, you know, but it did. And I have a story to prove it. I don't know, people who have seen a Whitesnake show in those days after my solo spot that lasted way too long. When I look at it back, I go, what I was thinking, you know? There's a wheelie for 5 minutes. But, yeah. But everybody did it.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
I'm guilty as well. So at the end of that solo spot, I threw the guitar up like 15 feet into the air, and I always caught it with one hand. Threw it up with this hand, bam. One time I missed, and that was in Brussels, Belgium. I missed, and the guitar ended up on that headstock, and cartwheels, it went like this from the stage, off the stage. I thought, that was my favorite one. Yeah. I thought, that one's gone. Picked it up after the show, it was still in tune. And there's just a little chip of the headstock is off, and there's a crack in the middle of the neck, but not in the wood.
Huh.
So I still play it, but I didn't bring it because I thought, you know, I want to play the Batman guitar.
Sure,
this tour.
So how similar is this one to your original signature width?
The body is exactly the same, but I suggested to PV I would have liked Seymour Duncan pickups on it for several reasons. First of all, I love those pickups, and I've got them. I got the JB on. This is a JB actually.
Mm.
I really like that pickup, and
I like that they did the JB with the red.
Yeah, it's cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then with the red dining, and it's got like little red diamond shapes graphics in here.
It's very Batman.
It's good enough for Batman.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the Joker to take it away. That's one difference. The other one is the original ones had a Kaler.
Yes.
And I heard from a lot of people at the time who got it, whenever they needed a part, they had a hard time finding it. So I suggested, let's put like the top of the line Floyd on it, which this is, and then the Duncans. And that's actually the only difference. The radius, the neck, the thinness of the neck, and the body shape is all the same. This is still a prototype. There's two other prototypes that were at the trade show, the NAMM show. But two of them didn't have the right, what do you call that? The curve on top.
Sure.
This one is very close to how it should be, but this doesn't have to be there. That should be flat also. But that's basically the only difference. And I kept, we held actually one of my older PVs right next to it, and it's just the same.
Cool.
Never changed a winning situation.
Yeah, right.
And I love it, you know, because a lot of thought went into it. I wanted a guitar where you can get like a great clean sound with a Strat style pickup. I mean, zillions of people do it, but
sure.
And it's a mahogany body with a maple top, so can't go wrong.
Yeah, perfect. And so right now you're touring with your old Les Paul, the prototype, and of course your acoustic, which you've got to have because that huge hit started.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
people would freak out if you didn't.
Yeah, right. And plus, you know, for this tour, we do a lot of Whitesnake material from my days with Whitesnake, about 70% of the show.
It's got to be fun, right?
Oh, it's a lot of fun because I haven't played it in 30 years, more than 30 years, 34 years, man.
Yeah. What is time, right?
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, Einstein was not stupid, you know, he knew it was relative, and,
right.
And that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
It's a weird realization, though, because when I play those songs again, after all the time, you're in a time machine with a crowd. But yeah, I got a Taylor T5 acoustic.
Yes, the hit that launched you started on acoustics. You've got to have acoustic on your show.
Yes, and ever since then, ever since my first tour in the States, I used the acoustic on a stand, and the first one was like a homemade kind of thing.
Right.
Was really,
yeah, because it didn't even exist back then, right?
It didn't exist. No. So. Right now, I got this beautiful Taylor. I think it's a T5, but it doesn't feed back, you know. So when you're, but I also we also do sailing ships. Oh, sorry, I need to cut my nails.
So do you have a classical background, or is that where you got into that? Or?
Well, in a sense I do. I can't read notes, I never had lessons, but my sister is a classical concert pianist.
Oh, okay.
And my dad used to play piano very well, trombone and whatever, and jazz bands and stuff. Yeah. So I realized later, especially in the early days of Vandenberg, that all that stuff is kind of echoing in my head.
Right, because you have these descending lines, working with ascending lines. It's all very kind of classical feeling.
Yeah, so
but I guess it just worked into your vocabulary, you know.
It did, because my sister was always studying piano, and I was upstairs with my Marshall stack crammed into my little teenage room, and she was doing Bach and Mozart and Beethoven. So this end bit of the Burning Heart solo is. So the thing, when my dad heard it, he said that could be a Bach from Johann Sebastian Bach kind of line, and for me it just bounces into my mind, and that must be, you know, like a total mix of Hendrix that I was listening to, and Earl Clapton, Leslie West, all the stuff. But my sister, you know, studying classic stuff downstairs.
You know, it's really interesting because that whole neoclassical thing was working into metal, and it kind of was coming from that stuff you were doing, like that really melodic.
I guess so. It's interesting because you only realize those things later on.
Right.
Because when you do it, it's normal because it pops up in your head. So you go, that's what you do. You know?
So for instance, on that solo, did you work it out ahead of time, or did you just blow and it came out?
It's a combination, and that's actually something that I learned from Jimmy Page, not from him personally, but the first two Vandenberg albums were recorded in Jimmy's studio in England.
Really?
And I met him a couple of times, and I talked, of course, I picked the brain of his engineer.
Yeah.
And because the first night we were there for the first album, I kind of wandered around the studio. I go, oh man, it's Jimmy Page's studio.
Yeah, right.
I hope there's a guitar somewhere, you know?
Yeah, right.
And then I accidentally walked into the tape room. And there were all the 24 tracks from all the Zeppelin records.
Wow.
Including like three 24 track or 12 track, whatever they were, from Stairway to Heaven. And you see all the titles were scribbled on the back. I go, man, this is...
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So
cool.
I asked the engineer, so how does Jimmy work? You know, he says, well, he records a couple of solos and then he knows exactly which part he wants to use from what solo. And I thought, well, it's good enough for Jimmy, then that's a way to approach it. And on the first Vandenberg album, I did not do that yet. What I did do is record a few solos. I go, oh, like this, left. And I think there's a couple of solos where I used the first half or the second half when we were recording the demos for it.
Sure.
And then I thought, oh, okay, that's good. So I relearned my own solos, which is what I still do, because live I want to play them like they are on the record.
Sure.
Because I'm a huge Brian May fan, and who's not? But
yeah.
So when I saw Queen live twice, and as a fan, I want to hear what I
right.
You know, like really, really, yeah. Oh man, those yeah. I want those melodies. You know, so. Yeah. Usually I relearn my own solos, which is an interesting process, because I go, why did I do that, you know?
Yeah.
And where did there's all these little strips on here, where did I play that? So it's like a pretty introspective process. And then you know, after a while I learn them and I play them, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so minimal gear, what are you using for amplifiers? I can see these four 412s, PV6505s, yes. And what is driving them?
Right now, for the so-called fly-in gigs, I mean, every guitar player pretty much knows what it is.
Sure.
We have all these festivals, and you have a tour like this. If I bring my Marshalls and Soldanos over here, then that's... impossible, plus it's tricky with all the tubes.
Sure.
So right now I started using the Quad Cortex.
Yeah,
and
great.
Willem and our front of house guy, Raymond, we got together and we used the sounds from a custom made Soldano that Mike Soldano made for me in the Whitesnake days. Marshall head that has been modded by my friend Peter van Wilden in Holland. He also worked on Eddie Van Halen's, he restored Eddie Van Halen's very first amp.
Oh.
But you know, because I'm in Holland, there's not, you've got over here, you've got those great guys like Friedman and,
sure.
Well, he's the man, of course, you know, and but I'm in Holland. And Peter has been working on my amps for a long time. Also does a great job. And so I got my modded Marshall and then that special Soldano.
So you modeled your own personal amplifier?
Yeah.
Oh, that's the way to do it.
Well, that's actually what Willem and Raymond do, because I don't know anything about the stuff.
Okay.
I just...
well, good. You got the white guy on it. That's great.
I go by my ear. I go, that's, you know, that's what I want to hear. So today when we changed the pickup on my Les Paul, you know, it was a very emotional moment.
Yeah.
But then... it sounded a little different than, of course, than the original one. So Willem and I messed around a little bit with the tonal setting, and I think, yeah, I like it the way it is now. And the rest, you know, I don't know. I'm not like a equipment geek is the word, I suppose, which nothing geeky about it actually. But I mean, there's so much great stuff, you know.
Right.
When I started out with Vandenberg, my amplifiers were heavily modified. Well, slowly but surely.
Sure.
I started out with a regular one, the first model with a Marshall, with the master volume.
Yes.
I go, wow, that saves one or two boxes already.
Yeah.
And little leads that can break up and all that stuff. So then I met this guy who studied on the university where my dad was teaching, and he was a great guitar player. And he said, yeah, I can take a look at your amp. And he started putting more and more little tubes in it and effects loops and all the stuff. So the first tour I did with Vandenberg, no, both of them actually, supporting Kiss and Ozzy, I brought my stuff from Holland, and this with those amps. And Peter van Wilden, the guy I just talked about, he learned pretty much the whole amplifier thing. He worked together with John, the first guy, and they modded my Marshall. I don't think it's a very special modification. What he did do though, he rewired, because they're 1994 plexis, and he rewired them to hand wired, you know, with all those little
sure.
capacitors and stuff. And yeah. I'm already pretty impressed that I know that it's called a capacitor. and they're definitely, you know, all those little things make a difference in the tone and how fat it is and all the stuff. And those Marshalls sound great. So when I'm in Holland, I usually use those or my Soldano or something, because we can, you know, when you're in Holland, you can take the stuff. And I got like one of those ISO cabinets.
Yes.
With a 200 watt selection.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, man, it's great.
Yeah.
Girls like to sit on it for some reason because it vibrates a lot. You know.
Right. Right.
I don't know anything about that. But yeah, it does. But you don't really hear anything. You
yeah.
know? It's great. You can crank up the Marshall as far as you like.
Right.
But for fly-ins, you know, this is so perfect.
So the Cortex, and then right into the Seymour Duncan amps or powering.
Yeah.
Power station on the stereo. It is.
Yeah.
Power station. The Seymour Duncan power
stage. Yeah.
Power stage.
And really great.
Yeah, and you have two of them in case one goes down, like a backup.
Yeah, I would be surprised if one goes down because, yeah,
right.
But there's, you never know.
There's nothing to go yeah. wrong. I mean, it's
that's
really...
Why, that's why we're using two Cortexes, because yeah. It takes a while to reboot them if the power goes off, clock.
Right.
So Willem can switch to the other one
right
away.
And you've never been a real heavy effects guy, but so far everything is just right on that. You have no pedals in front of or anything like that.
No, because I've always been a purist, you know.
Yeah.
What we use is a rhythm sound, the lead sound, which is just basically a little boost.
Yeah.
Same sound basically, and then a clean sound. It's got a little bit of chorus, a bit of delay. And a clean-ish sound, but also has the stuff. But that's what I've always done, you know?
Yeah.
So this thing has a zillion possibilities, but for me, it's intimidating.
Yeah, and so you got clean and dirty.
That's it, that's
yeah.
it, you know?
And a million sounds, but you go with chocolate or vanilla.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You know, with all those pedal boards, I'm really impressed that guys do that, you know? But you have to be like a tap dancer, basically, to
yeah.
You go like this, you know, I just want to play. And and Willem switches when I go to the lead. Willem knows where it is, and he goes click, bam, boom,
and it's right there.
Done.
Yeah, great, great.
Don't make it more complicated than it needs to be.
Well, I know you guys got to get us out of here so you can get your sound check in, but God, it is such a pleasure to meet you.
And, likewise, thank you.
Yeah, grateful thanks. For all this. Yeah. Y'all, till next time.
See ya.
I've had, if we counted them, probably 7 bad D'Addario strings in 30 years.
The reason we only stock D'Addario strings is because D'Addario strings are perfect.
It's nice to be able to depend on something.